This is the Unspoiled Book Club covering His Dark Materials. Book 1, The Golden Compass, chapters 19 through 23. In these chapters, bears fight, Roger dies, Lord Asriel and Mrs. Coulter kiss, and Lyra climbs up the stairway to heaven to that deluxe apartment in the sky. Welcome to Unspoiled.
On up,
moving on up
to the east side, to the alternate dimension.
Doesn't ring quite as well, does
that's,
it?
That's how it goes.
Hi, I'm Owen.
Hi, everybody.
I haven't read these books.
No, he has not.
I haven't read the books. I haven't seen the movie. I know that Daniel Craig is involved in there somewhere,
and
this is Natasha. And she's taking a sip of her tea, but she has read the books and has seen the movie, and she loved them both equally.
You are so full of shit right now. I can't ever let you speak for me again. I've learned my lesson.
I mean, you should have known better.
So what did you think of these last chapters? Because I asked you and you said to me, we'll talk about it, in this tone that suggests that you did not care for it.
Well, I didn't like it. I loved it.
You're full of shit.
I liked it a lot.
Did you really?
I did.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
Like I said, like so it took a while for it to get going for me, but like this bit, like at the end, it was good.
Okay.
It introduced my favorite character, who was only in like two scenes, the crazy professor guy.
Oh, the one, the guy that she's locked up with?
Yeah, he's great. He's even better because I am listening to the audiobook versions, and in the audiobook, whoever performs him does an amazing job. Like, he's so crazy. I like the thing with the King of the Polar Bears. What's his name?
That's Yorick. Eofur Ragnarsson. And hers
they have the same last name?
No.
Yorick Ragnarsson. Or Bernason.
Bernason, yeah.
Eofur
okay.
Ragnarsson. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Who is, like, this whole time they, you know, anytime someone's been talking about him, they kind of set him up as like a very clever polar bear who's like outsmarting everyone and tricking everyone. But really, he's only smart for a bear. He's still dumb and like really easy to manipulate, which was a little disappointing, but also really fun because he was so stupid.
And it's also to be like, it's not even that he's like just dumb, but he's so blinded by the like one thing that he wants that I feel like he's much, very much like a human being in that we'll see whatever we want to see. If it kind of means that we're going to get what we want, we'll just, it's sort of like when you get your tarot cards read and you're like, am I going to get the promotion? And she's like, well, I'm seeing this, this and that. And you're like, oh, that sounds like I'm going to get the promotion. That sounds like that's what that is. And you can just sort of make up whatever the hell you want as long as it fits with what you,
I mean, that sounds like tarot cards to me.
But you know what I'm saying? Like, yeah. She's telling him just what he wants. He's always wanted to believe that it's possible. And now somebody's
like,
shown up who just happens to know.
I liked her plan. I feel like it could have been written in a way that, like, you have to give so much in her explanation to just, you know, him being dumb.
Okay.
Like, in how she sells it to him. He's just like, you know, she'll point out, he'll point out things or she'll point out things and she'll just be like, oh, well, it's this way. Like, a lot of it has to ride on either her being the best liar in the world or him being dumb as rocks.
What do you feel like wasn't that believable that she had to explain away?
Just like the whole situation. It's all circumstantial. She does nothing to really prove it. Like, the only thing, he's like, prove it. And she's like, oh, I have to go into that room over there where no one can watch. And he's like, oh, okay.
Well, I actually liked that because she was like, once I'm your demon, you can see it. But until then, it has to be private, which while it doesn't really make sense, he doesn't know how demons work. So it could for him. You know what I mean? Like,
it could, but it sounds fishy. And if he wasn't dumb, he would know that he would maybe be slightly more suspicious.
That's fair.
Which he, like, the minute she's like, oh, I'm a demon, he's like, you're sweet. Let's do this.
Yeah.
Like, he's very dumb. I like the ending. I like that, as I suspected, Lord Asriel is evil. Mm-hmm. And I like the ending is very promising.
Yes. This was something that I think I was speaking with, was it Trevor yesterday or Austin?
Probably who said, Austin.
At the end of this book, I just didn't know where else the story could go because it seemed like such a complete arc. And it really is.
Well, it basically adds up, it ties all the loose ends from the first book,
mm-hmm.
more or less. Like, not neatly, but it ties them up and there's nothing,
Yeah.
She accomplished all those goals that she had, either she accomplished or can't be accomplished anymore because of the way things have gone.
Yeah.
So I don't know what she's going to do in Earth 2. which, the way it's described, I can't remember how specific they are. Like, could it be our Earth? Like, it just sounds like it's a city with towers and
yeah,
shit.
Yeah, there's not any real description of it besides the fact that there's a city, there's palm trees, and I mean, where she is, there could very well be palm trees. We just haven't been in that part of the country.
Mm-hmm.
So, it's not defined at all what kind of world it is.
Yeah.
All right, well, let's get into this then. So, talking about Lyra's captivity and being locked up with this dude.
We should note here that whenever I had some pretty bad computer problems. In fact, right now my computer doesn't work at all. But when I went to sync all of the files onto my phone last time, I didn't get the last four minutes of the previous chapter.
Okay.
So I get to see, because when we were recording, you were like, oh yeah, and then she gets captured by the bears. And I was just kind of like, I don't remember that. So I saw her get captured by the bears.
Okay. That explains it. Because I was like, that's right at the end. How do you miss that? And she's brought into this place. It's a huge, marble building, palace type deal, but it's gross. There's all these birds on it. And the bear who has her captive is describing all of the carvings that are on it, and she has to take him at his word because there's so much bird shit you can't even see. And it just smells really bad, and there's carpets laid down in the hallways that are matted with filth, and there's gold filigree decorations on the walls that are peeling. It's too wet and disgusting and crawling with live things to be able to be the kind of palace that a person would have. And, unfortunately, Eofor doesn't really seem to get that distinction and keeps trying.
Yeah, it kind of reminded me, made me think of, Jabba's palace. Obviously, very okay. different, but kind of, supposed to be really nice, but also, really dingy and gross
mm-hmm.
at the same time. Have you ever been in a house like this? That, the furnishings, and it's, a nice house, and everything in it should be nice, but it's so disgusting that it's always a bummer.
It is a bummer. It's what are you doing in this place?
Yeah.
So she gets put into this, this cell, and she's reading her alethiometer, and it tells her that Eofor's coming for her, or Yorick. Yorick.
Now,
is it Eofor and Yorick?
Yeah, Yorick's the good guy.
And Eofor?
Yeah, Eofor.
Eofor sounds
stupid. I think we're pronouncing wrong.
You don't remember from the audiobook?
I mean, it is, but it's said with, an accent, you know?
Okay.
If you just say Eofor, it sounds like a gopher. Now, how is this written out in the book? Because in the audiobook, it's almost like the alethiometer is talking.
Yes, that's exactly what it's like. It's
in
the
italics.
Answer came at once. A day's journey away, carried there by the balloon after your crash, but hurrying this way. It's changed from her having to interpret to it being a voice in her head, essentially, almost.
Good, because that sometimes got old. A lightning bug, and the lightning bug means that there will
be
lightning bugs.
Yeah.
It reminds me of, I know you haven't seen these, but in the old Batman 66 show, whenever the Riddler would send riddles,
mm-hmm.
and Batman would piece them together, even though they would make no sense. what sits in a tree and is deadly? A sparrow with a machine gun. Of course, the Penguin.
Oh.
And that's the way the alethiometer reads a lot of the time.
Okay.
And in this, you can kind of give it to her that she's got mental powers.
Right.
But sometimes it was kind of funny also, but a lot of times it would be I don't see. Okay.
So this is when she gets frightened really badly because there's a dude in there already named Jotham Santelia.
And he's crazy.
And he used to be a professor of cosmology at the University of Gloucester and apparently believes that Professor Trelawney from Jordan College like stole a bunch of his work and stole credit for everything.
Sounds like something she would do. Bitch.
That's right. I love that I had never heard the name Trelawney anywhere until Harry Potter. And then it was in this too. And I remember being like, wait, what?
That's probably a name.
I think it is. I just never had heard it before.
And this did come out after Harry Potter. So maybe it's like a sly, like a nod.
Maybe.
Of some sort. I mean, probably not.
But yeah, the number of words that he finds to you, like duplicitous, plagiarist, coxcomb, scoundrel, thief, blackguard, rogue. And yeah, she has to kind of like pretend to know what he's talking about and agree with him.
She's like, oh yeah, that guy that you talked about, what a jerk.
Yep. She's like, yeah, and even when he does his own work, he gets it wrong. And he's like, yes, exactly. which was really smart of her. And finally, she's like, well, I'm sure that you could teach me some stuff because somebody needs to carry on your knowledge after you're gone so that we can all remember you. And she asks to learn about the bears. And he tells her, first of all, like, what Yofur had originally promised him, which is that he would be able to, like, set up some sort of college mm-hmm. up there and make him vice chancellor. And also she has mentioned the fact that Yorick is coming for her, and he tells her that there's no way they're letting Yorick come anywhere close. He's too low down on the totem pole for Yofur to bother fighting him, and they are just going to use flamethrowers or fire. What do they call them? Firethrowers?
Yeah, I was wondering if that meant like a gun, you know, like a firearm, or if it was a flamethrower.
Well, later on we actually see them.
Yeah.
And it's like an arm that throws like live coals and fire.
That's terrifying.
Mm-hmm. That's what takes down the balloon.
Ah, okay.
The dirigible?
Yeah, the dirigible. It? Dirigible?
What is it?
Zeppelin?
Zeppelin, that's the one. And yeah, so she's really bummed out at the fact that it looks like there's no possible way for Yorick to get anywhere near them without dying first. And then she brings up Lord Asriel, and he freaks out and is like, we are not supposed to talk about him. Shut the fuck up. And he tells her that Lord Asriel is being kept as a special charge, special prisoner by the Oblation Board, because he really has messed with stuff that they want him to stay the fuck out of. And he also mentions about meeting Mrs. Coulter and the fact that Yofur was totally infatuated with her. Smitten. Besotted. He was going to name his capital city after her.
That's crazy.
Right? And Yofur is trying to keep Lord Asriel happy because he's a noble guest, and the bears are smart enough to at least know to treat noble guests with courtesy in case they can be useful later. Noble hostages. But at the same time, the Oblation Board just is thinking about moving him further and further out, possibly to a different prison entirely.
Yeah.
And he says, you know, if that's what Mrs. Coulter wants, that's what'll happen.
Yeah, if they want him 100 leagues from here, I think is what he says.
Yeah. And then he mentions the wave function of this situation is going to collapse quite soon. I have it on good authority. My demon's tongue can taste probability, you know. Yeah, mine too. When do they feed us, Professor? I love how she just, like, totally passes by that, and he doesn't even argue with
her. Is it after this or before this when he brings up that what the king wants is a demon?
Oh,
I feel like that's where she gets her whole idea.
He doesn't bring it up, actually.
She just remembers.
She remembers. She felt her way back to the bench and chewed a fingernail. Quite suddenly, with no warning at all, she remembered what it was she'd heard the Palmyrium professor say in the retiring room all that time ago. Something had been nagging at her ever since Yorick Bernison had first mentioned Yofer's name, and now it came back. What Yofer Ragnarsson wanted more than anything else, Professor Trelawney had said, was a demon. Of course she hadn't understood what he meant. He'd spoken of Panzerborn instead of using the English word, so she didn't know what he was talking about and had no idea Yofer Ragnarsson wasn't a man. So, yeah, this is where she figures it out, and there becomes the very thin idea of, okay, I could do something with that. So she manages to convince the bears when they come to feed them that they really need to take her to speak to Yofer, because otherwise he's going to be mad because the king really should know first. And it's just rude if I tell you and you know before him, which I enjoyed a lot, because she points out that while they might not have been so easy to fool, he's introducing so many new customs and so much new behavior because they're trying to act more like men that they're unsure of what the protocol is anymore. So things that they would otherwise be very solid on and confident with, now they don't trust their own instincts anymore. So,
now luckily for them, Yofer's an idiot.
Yeah, right. Yofer's ruining everything. So they take her to the throne room, and she sees Yofer, who is gigantic and wearing a ton of gold and has gold-tipped claws and everything.
Yeah, and she says that he's even bigger than Yorick.
Yes.
Like, most of the other bears she's seen have been smaller than Yorick, but not Yofer. Yofer's huge.
And I like the fact that the way he's described, he was wearing a heavy gold chain around his neck with a gaudy jewel hanging from it, and his claws, a good 6 inches long, were each covered in gold leaf. The effect was one of enormous strength and energy and craft. He was quite big enough to carry the absurd over-decoration. On him, it didn't look preposterous. It looked barbaric and magnificent. She quailed. Suddenly, her idea seemed too feeble for words. Which I really like that moment. Because if she walked in there and just had control over the situation right away, I'd be like, bullshit. But first seeing him and her having the real fear. And later on, when she's so scared that she has to go and, like, weep in fear because she's so sure that Yorick is going to die.
Yeah.
I was just, like, kind of touched by that. But then when she walks in and gets closer, she sees that he has a doll on his knee dressed like Mrs. Coulter. And that he's pretending that it's his demon.
That's so adorable. It's so pathetic.
Right? And apparently a lot of the other bears have them, too, because now it's fashionable.
It makes me think of, like, Robin, or, I guess, Robert Aaron
from Game
of Thrones with his dolls.
I forgot that he had that whole thing.
Yeah.
So you still liked her plan.
I thought it was an awesome plan, because you don't really know it until she's like, I'm a demon. And I was like, oh! No, I was very impressed. It's a good plan. I just feel like... And I mean, you know, your mileage may vary on this. I just kind of would have liked it if he had been a little more clever and more suspicious. But I thought it was a good plan and it was cool. She's like, I'm a demon. He's like, but demons are animals. He's like, not if you're already an animal. And he was like, ooh.
Right. And the fact that she's the opposite sex too.
Yeah.
Because they like that just worked out really well. And knowing that, witch demons can go further from their owners than human demons, so she has an explanation for that.
Mm-hmm.
She's got a lot of good explanations for all of the little questions, really. So yeah, he asks her to prove it. Who was my first kill? And it turns out it was his dad.
Yeah.
And nobody knows that at all.
That was my first kill.
It's got dark.
Yeah. Now only you and I know that.
Only us two, alone in this room.
And the listeners, but the listeners won't tell anyone.
Will you, listeners? And what's the other question that he asks? I'm trying to see.
What Miss Coulter promised him? Was that what it was?
Right. She promised you that she'd get the magisterium in Geneva to agree that you could be baptized as a Christian.
Right. I forgot about that.
And
she's like, it'll work because you'll have a demon.
Yeah. She's like, when she promised that, she couldn't do it. And she was pretty much lying to you. So sorry. But now, if you have a demon, you can get that. It just wouldn't have worked. So she was basically pulling your leg.
Yeah.
And
there's something. Oh, and it's here that she also tells him that, you know, if you fight Yorick in a battle to the death, then if you kill him, you can have his demon.
Mm-hmm.
Even though that's not how demons work. Mm-mm. And it never has been.
It never has been, but he's the first person, or first anybody, animal or human, to be assigned a demon scientifically.
Mm-hmm.
Like, because he's supposed to be an experiment from the Oblation Board.
Yeah.
So, anything could be true, you know? She can kind of go wherever she wants with this. As long as the basic idea of what a demon is and does is similar, how the demon works in connection to whoever she's assigned to can really go any way she wants. I think. And then she tells him, the single combat thing, and not to tell anybody else about it yet, because once we're together, you and me, we can think of what best to do and decide. What you need to do now is explain to all the bears why you're going to let Yorick fight you. And she is like, make them think it's your idea that he's coming,
mm-hmm.
which is a really good idea also. So,
yeah, because otherwise the guards would just shoot him on sight.
Yeah. Well, I mean, not just telling them that he's coming, but telling them that I told him to come here.
Oh, okay.
You know, so it's much more his control, and it looks like he's got dominance over everything that's happening, instead of it just being somebody's coming here to attack me and assert their authority over mine.
Yeah.
So they set up this whole area for the combat, and he has some serious armor. And gets his claws filed down to points that tear open a dead seal, like tissue paper, I think is the way he puts it.
Uh-huh.
And she's getting really freaked out because Yorick is going to have been traveling for like 24 hours straight with no rest. He won't have eaten.
Yeah.
He has great armor, but it's not covering nearly as much of his body. And Yorick is not as big as Yofur is.
Yeah.
And she's just really starting to freak out. So Yorick shows up and she's allowed to go and speak to him alone first.
One thing that's before this that I really like is she talks about some of the other noble bears show up with their doll still.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Yofur doesn't have it anymore. And then, like, it makes them worried.
They look around not sure what to do with theirs. Yeah, she saw with a sardonic pleasure. I liked that a lot. So when she tells Yorick, she thinks that he's going to be upset or worried or anything, but he is super happy about it.
And he gives her a new nickname, Lyra Silvertongue.
What do you think?
I mean, I like it. I think it's really cute, but I also think it was like such a ridiculous lie that he fell for that it's kind of funny.
Well, I mean, that's kind of the point, isn't it? If you're a really good liar, if you can get somebody to believe something super ridiculous.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's what you would call someone if they were like, hey, I convinced them that this really impossible thing just happened. And you're like, and you get to do that thing you wanted to do that there was no way you were going to get to do. And you're like, Jesus, dude.
They come forward. Yorick starts off like telling them what the deal is, which I kind of enjoyed, that Yofur doesn't get things under control off the bat like he should. So Yorick comes out there and is like, if he's king, if he kills me, he's king forever. If I kill him, I'm your king. My first order to you all will be to tear down that palace, that perfumed house of mockery and tinsel, and hurl the gold and marble into the sea. Iron is bare metal. Gold is not. Yofur Ragnarsson has polluted Svalbard. I have come to cleanse it. Yofur Ragnarsson, I challenge you.
That is a pretty good speech.
Right?
He's like, fuck your house, fuck your couch, fuck you.
And then Yofur, Yorick Bernarsson has come back at my invitation. I drew him here. It is for me to make the terms of this combat, and they are these. If I kill Yorick, his flesh shall be torn apart and scattered to the cliff guests. His head shall be displayed above my palace. His memory shall be obliterated. It shall be a capital crime to speak his name. And it just sort of fades out. He continued, and then each bear spoke again. I really like the fact that we do not have to listen to the whole thing, but goes back and forth for a minute. So then they start fighting.
That's pretty sweet.
It is pretty sweet. This is something that I do not remember how it was handled in the movie.
Yeah.
And I feel like it would be an amazing thing to watch on a screen, but if it was done badly, it would be just...
Well, I mean, it's just in the movie, it's just two CGI cartoons, like... Mm-hmm. Swinging at each other. Like, I could see it being kind of boring.
I mean, I liked watching the dinosaurs fight each other in Jurassic Park.
Yeah.
So, that's what I mean. Like, if it's done really well,
yeah.
It can... But if it's not, then it's just really boring or cringeworthy.
Or, at best, it's like in Jurassic World, where it was, like, it was really cool while you were watching that, and you kind of forget how it went.
Hmm.
Because, like... I remember how the fight ends in Jurassic World, because it ends great. But, like, the little details, I'm like, yeah, they, like, jumped on the T-Rex or something. I don't know.
Something. So, yeah, they fight. It looks like, at first, that Yofur's got a big advantage because of his armor and everything. But it starts to become pretty clear that his armor weighs him down a lot. And it's just not as high of quality as Yorick's is. And he has to get rid of a bunch of pieces of it. Like, there's chainmail that's torn and, like, hanging around his back legs and just kind of impeding him.
Mm-hmm.
And nevertheless, he's way bigger still.
Yeah.
And that has that advantage. And it looks at one point like Yorick's injured.
Yeah.
And is doing these really sad little swipes and barely even, like, able to hit with that arm.
But he's playing him.
He's playing him. And waits until he has a spot where he can get some really good traction and then launches himself at Yofur and rips the bottom of his jaw and his throat out.
Yeah, it's pretty badass.
I loved the fact that it was such a brutal death. Like, if he had just ripped his throat out, just his throat, it would not be as, like, gut-wrenching as... his whole bottom half of his jaw and his tongue. It was a horrifying blow. It tore the lower part of his jaw clean off so that it flew through the air, scattering blood drops in the snow many yards away. Yofur's red tongue lolled down, dripping over his open throat. The Bear King was suddenly voiceless, biteless, helpless. And then, yeah, he goes up and takes his throat. So, bye-bye, Yofur.
That's so gross.
And immediately, all of the bears start to get to work to taking down the palace.
Yeah.
And Lyra has to be like, yeah, there's still people in there. Can we, like, not kill them with falling debris?
There's a crazy professor in there
mm-hmm.
who's a lot of fun.
And finally, she gets woken up. She takes a nap under some snow. For a little while they're doing that.
One of those snow naps.
And when she wakes up, Roger is here. And Roger...
But not for long.
Not for long. Roger had been kept off to the side while Yorick went and did his mission. But now they're together again, and she's so happy. And they also find out that Mrs. Coulter had fed a drug to the bear that Yorick killed. In order to get him to not stop and force Yorick to kill him, which would get him exiled.
Oh, okay.
So, Mrs. Coulter apparently saw that Yorick was not going to have it.
Yeah.
And was like, yeah, Yorick, we need him gone.
Yorick didn't like dolls.
Mm-mm. He's not a dude to play with dolls. And that the ultimate plan that Mrs. Coulter had... was to set up another, like, arm of the oblation board up there and essentially turn the bears into guardians, but have them, like, at her bidding, running back and forth and obeying her like servants instead of being the dominant, gigantic, amazing beasts that they actually are.
Yeah.
So
that yeah, she finds out through the alpheometer that she's actually on her way with, like, an army, right?
Yes, and machine guns on her Zeppelin.
Yes.
Just kind of awesome. So yeah, I think she's like 4 hours away, and then there's a whole army of Tartars that'll be there in a couple of days. And then she says that she has to go and see Lord Asriel to bring him the alethiometer. So she gets to Lord Asriel's house. He does not seem happy to see her.
Yeah, he flips out when he sees her.
Yeah.
And, like, I just thought it was, like, a weird thing. Like, I actually didn't get, like, what his whole thing, what his plan was going to be until he started doing it. And then I was like, oh, shit.
Yeah.
And then I was like, yeah, he's totally going to kill Roger.
Yeah, once you realize, you're like, how did I not fucking see that? Yeah. But it's not obvious, you know?
That's why he freaks out when she shows up, because he didn't want to have to sacrifice her.
Yeah. Despite the fact that he appears to not care that he's her father. When she's like, you're my dad. And he's like, yeah, so.
Yeah, he's the worst in this. He's such a dick.
And I love how she's like, you should have told me. That's what. And I didn't know. And you do something like that and make somebody not know something. And then they find out and they feel like an idiot. And that's cruel. And anyway, I would have kept your secret because I would have been super proud. And I just wouldn't have said anything. But he just straight up doesn't care. I have to say, though, the fact that they're, like, wet and cold for so long and they finally get to take hot baths with fluffy towels and go to bed, it made me happy in my heart.
Yeah.
Unfortunately,
it will be Roger's last bath.
Yes. At least he had a good night before.
And his last towel.
And Roger can tell something is up because he's like, as soon as your dad saw me, he calmed right down and he looked at me like a shark.
Yeah. He says that he's more creeped out by Azrael than he was by Mrs. Coulter.
Yeah, which is fucking saying something. Yeah. But Arya just says, you imagined it. And, oh, there I go. It had to happen eventually. Lyra just says, you imagined it. And she says, do you want me to ask the alethiometer? And he's like, you know what? No, I don't want to know anymore because nothing good comes out of the future. And if I just focus on right now, I have a really nice bath. I have a great towel. I'm probably going to have a nice dinner. Let's just focus on this right now.
I'm sure,
and not think about
it. I'm sure
anything.
Plenty of other good things will happen after that.
I really like that train of thought, though. And the fact that when he tells her that, she kind of like sighs and is like, I feel that way sometimes, too. Because it wouldn't have rung true for her to just not look because he asked her not to. But for her to have this fatigue about prophecies or knowing things makes total sense. So just the whole way that was handled and the fact that she could have seen this, but she didn't. I feel like it could have been muddled so that I would feel like, oh, that's so contrived. But this actually, I think, worked out really well.
Yeah.
So she goes to bed, wakes up, and servant.
Did we, I guess we completely skipped over the big exposition dump that Asriel gives, where he's like, talks about what dust is. It's like original sin or something. Like, I thought it was kind of interesting. Like, in the moment, I thought it was a well done scene, but I was also, you know, like, after getting away from it, I'm just like, wait, that's all it was? Like, you still don't know anything. Like, what?
That's what I meant.
Like, it's weird church dogma shit.
It is, but it's like, it's the kind of thing that there is no other explanation for. And of course, that's what
they're still are like trying to figure it out.
Yeah. And that's what I meant when I was like, you know, they're never going to really explain it. It's going to be everybody's theories, but you don't ever get like, no, this is what it is.
I like also that, like, while she's talking to him, she's like, you know, why would they let them do this? This is terrible. And then she asks him, like, well, what do you think? And he's like, oh, I don't think they go far enough. And I was like, this motherfucker, this is bad. This won't end well. And I was right.
Yeah. And the whole, like, Bible passage that is altered to include the demons.
Oh, yeah.
I kind of love that.
Yeah, that was crazy.
Let's see. And the eyes of them both were opened, and they saw the true form of their demons and spoke with them. But when the man and the woman knew their own demons, they knew that a great change had come upon them. For until that moment, it had seemed that they were at one with all the creatures of the earth and the air, and there was no difference between them. And they saw the difference, and they knew good and evil, and they were ashamed, and they sewed fig leaves together to cover their nakedness.
I always wonder how you sew fig leaves together.
I was thinking I've always wondered that as a kid. Like, I was like, vines? What do you do? I mean, as a child, I had so many problems with biblical stories that nobody fucking ever would answer. And it didn't really occur to me at the time that they're not answering me because they don't know. They were avoiding the question entirely and making it seem like, well, we're just moving on to talk about something else, but we'll get back to your question. And then we just mysteriously never did. Mm-hmm. So I kept just thinking, well, I'll figure it out. They'll tell me. And I just never, and now I'm like, oh, because you're fucking idiots who just make shit up. That's all.
I would like to once again apologize to our Christian listeners.
I mean, if you have an explanation for this, then fine. But nobody wants to tell me shit.
Odds are, if you're one of the Christian listeners, you're probably skipping the Golden Compass podcast.
I'm going to go ahead and assume that you don't listen to the show in general, because this isn't the first time that I've made disparaging remarks. But anyway, that, yeah. So dust is supposed to be original sin, and mentions, for dust thou art, and unto dust shalt thou return. And that some of them say that the verse is kind of a pun on the words ground and dust, and that it really means that God's admitting his own nature to be partly sinful.
Yeah, and I'm just like, I don't know what any of this means. which I think is the point. Like,
yeah.
He's just talking about how it's all, this, like, because that's where it comes. Have you ever listened to the Bible Geek podcast?
Mm-mm.
It's a really good podcast. It's this biblical scholar. He used to be a minister for a long time. Like, he knows a bunch of shit, but it's all, he just answers religious questions, and it's okay. Super interesting, except that a lot of the stuff is like deep, like inside baseball religious questions about like apocryphal gospels.
Did you say inside baseball?
Yeah, that's a term, that's an expression.
It is?
Yeah,
I've never heard that before. Okay.
It means like nitty-gritty, like stuff you would only get, like, if you're a part of that world, like, if you understand, like, behind the scenes.
Okay.
Is what I mean. Anyway, like, he'll talk about, like, apocryphal gospels and, like, ancient, like, medieval religious thoughts and stuff. And, like, it gets so convoluted where they're talking about where, like, I can't follow it.
Yeah.
But when he talks about more basic things or generally, like, it's really well done. And I feel like, you know, if you've been exposed to, like, really like convoluted theological arguments and stuff, like, that's the way it feels. It's like, if you don't understand those and you just hear them, you're just like, but what does that have to do with anything?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And I like the fact that he's like, no one agrees. No one can, because the text is corrupt, but it was too good a word to waste. And I'm like, is it? Okay.
That's how Bible verses work a lot of the times though. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, they'll say something in the Bible and they mean it in a specific context, but it'll be used generally to apply to, you know, things in our, that relate to us more, even if that's not what it was intended for.
Mm-hmm.
And he also talks about how, when they're severing the demons, they're wasting like a big burst, like an energy that can be harnessed.
Yes.
He's just like, yeah, it's a terrible thing that they're doing, but they could really be...
they could be taking advantage of it a little bit better. I mean, God.
Yeah.
He's
the worst.
And she's like, how the fuck can the church allow this? And he's like, they used to cut off boys' junk so that they'd be better singers. So this shouldn't be surprising.
Yeah, there's a precedent for this kind of behavior.
And I was like, shit, and then I remember
that
true.
I was like, yeah, that's a thing that people used to do. That's so awful.
Isn't it? We need a soprano really bad. Well, you could have a girl sing. Oh, God. Fuck you, you monster. A girl? No, cut his balls off. Jesus, we're not savages that let women sing. Because that's our world, folks.
Well, not so much anymore.
Not necessarily, but it was a thing.
There are much fewer castratis these days.
And when you think about how recent that was, 500 years ago.
Yeah.
It's kind of terrifying. 500 years is not that long a time in the grand scheme. All right. Anyway, so he tells her to go to bed. Oh, and she tries to give him the alethiometer, and he's like, no, I don't need that. And I don't have the book anyway. It wouldn't be any good to me. Did he tell you to give me that? And she's like, well, yeah. And then she stops and she's like, I guess not. No. And he's like, yeah, you can keep it. That's fine. Whatever.
It's weird to me that he does this, too. Like, even if he can't use it, like, why does he want her to have it?
I mean, if he doesn't need it, I think he seems to be a very single-minded, practical person.
I guess.
And he's just like, that's not a thing. No. I mean, I don't think he... believes that she could probably use it either.
Yeah.
You know? So she gets woken up by Thorold, who is freaking out because her dad was acting super weird, weirder than usual.
Yeah, he's like, hey, I mean, this might be nothing, but he ran off with a sledge with a bunch of scientific equipment and that kid.
Right.
And all of his books on child murdering theory.
I don't want to be paranoid, but... and this is when Lyra realizes...
She's like, oh, fuck, right.
Yep.
Obviously.
And this is something that... was it Farter Quorum or the Jordan College guy that knew that she was going to betray somebody in the beginning of the book?
Oh, is that what they were talking about? That was the president of the college or whatever.
Okay.
The chancellor?
Is that what he's called? I can never remember.
The Steve.
Magister? I don't know. But yeah, so this is when she realizes, and she gets Yorick and rides off to rescue him. But they get attacked.
There's a big battle.
There's a lot of shit going on in this part. First, the witches show up. And she, when she hears the word witches, is all happy and, like, relieved. Until she realizes, oh, it's not my witches.
It's the bad witches.
It's the bad ones. And they're firing arrows. And the bears are apparently really used to fighting witches.
They're like, yeah, we fought witches.
These witches again? And they set up that fire thrower, and the Zeppelin comes, like, over the hillside.
And this is Mrs. Coulter's Zeppelin, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
And...
it's a badass battle Zeppelin.
And they hurl the flaming sulfur high into the dark sky. There were so many witches in the air that first a bunch of them get lit on fire and brought down. And then the... flaming sulfur, the second batch, throws into the basket of the Zeppelin and then into the bag, and it explodes. Thing goes down. They're plenty, like, a lot of the people are fine, actually, but they are able to, like, salvage a machine gun and, like, set it up on the ground and start using it outside. Yeah. Just, like, it's just so insane. And then as soon as Yorick feels like his guys have got it under control, they continue on. And they come to this, like, bridge of snow. It's compacted snow that is barely strong enough to have held Asriel when he went across with his sledge, because it's got a huge crack in the middle. And obviously Lyra's not going to be able to cross with Yorick. She's going to have to go alone.
Yeah.
And she just manages to cross it before it just completely falls away. But yeah, her having to leave Yorick there really bummed me out.
Yeah.
I was like...
Well, if Yorick had gone, he could have ripped off Lord Asriel's head.
Yeah.
And eaten it.
I don't think he would have done that.
And shit down his neck.
What is that from?
I think it's from Full Metal Jacket.
Oh, okay. So, when she gets up there... her dad is setting up this crazy contraption. The Aurora is going on the whole time.
Yeah.
And she sees that there's a witch's demon that has taken one of the wires and, like, carried it up into the sky. So it's connected somehow to the Aurora. And he is able to basically turn the Aurora on and off.
Yeah.
Which is...
it's all connected to this giant on-off light switch.
Yes. It's huge. He has to use both hands. Yeah. And his demon, Lord Asriel's demon, is holding Roger's demon.
It's so sad.
It's so sad. This is so fucked up. The little creature was struggling, flapping, fighting, one moment a bird, the next a dog, then a cat, a rat, a bird again, calling every moment to Roger himself, who was a few yards off, straining, trying to pull away against the heart-deep tug, and crying out with the pain and the cold. He was calling his demon's name and calling Lyra. He ran to Lord Asriel and plucked his arm, and Lord Asriel brushed him aside. He tried again, crying and pleading, begging, sobbing, and Lord Asriel took no notice except to knock him to the ground.
He's a jerk.
Lord Asriel's the fucking worst. And then Mrs. Coulter shows up.
I thought it was after he's dead. Does she show up during?
Oh, does she show up after? Hold on. Let's see. Both children were fighting her. She pulled hard. They tore away from Lord Asriel. Oh, and then, and they wind up on another, like, shelf of snow that starts to slide away. And his body suddenly limp in hers and high above the greatest wonder at the moment.
Yeah, that, see, the way that's phrased, like, I kept having a hard time understanding what was happening.
Yeah, this is actually pretty hard to follow, because yeah, I remember when I got here, I read it a few times.
I had to keep going, and I was trying to listen to it on my iPhone, and, like, I had to keep taking it back. I was having a real hard time. Like, it's not phrased well.
Mm-mm.
I kept, at first I was thinking, because I think Pantalaimon is mentioned earlier, I thought Pantalaimon was dead.
Okay. That
she, like, got severed somehow, because it's super unclear.
I gotcha.
And for it to be kind of, like, the big moment or whatever. Like, I feel like he keeps it, like, brief and vague, like, to make it shocking.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not well done.
Okay. I think that's fair, because I remember getting this part and rereading it a few times.
Yeah. But, yeah, the demon dies, and it, I guess his snow leopard kills the demon, and it kills Roger.
His snow leopard's holding the demon, and he has a, it says, Roger cried and twisted because his demon was caught again, and he held fast in the snow leopard's jaws, and Lord Asriel himself was reaching down toward her with a wire. And Lyra knew the heart-convulsing pain of separation and tried to stop, but they couldn't stop. The cliff was sliding away beneath them.
See, that's really badly phrased, because it sounds like her demon is being severed.
Yeah, knew the heart-convulsing pain of separation. Yeah, it does sound like that. I agree. Yeah.
So I guess they separate it, and that's what kills Roger, just the shock of it?
Yeah, I think that's because that's something that they mentioned at Bolvangar, was that the first many experiments that they did trying to do this killed their subjects. Okay. And it seems like the wire that he's using, that he, like, put towards Roger's demon, mm-hmm. was what severed it somehow.
Right. Okay. Because didn't they say that there's, like, a certain kind of metal that helps with separation?
Yeah. I don't remember what it is. So
it's probably made out of that or something.
And maybe the fact that they were sliding away, because when she says that, you know, she knew the heart convulsing pain of separation and tried to stop, but they couldn't stop. The cliff was sliding away beneath them. Yeah. So it seems like Lord Asriel, maybe he just doesn't have a good way to do the separation, and pulling them apart is the only option. So he's having his demon hold on to Roger's, and then the wire isn't to actually sever it, but to just conduct the energy.
Yeah, and so he just pushes him down the cliff or whatever. Yeah. Okay. All right. That is just, it shouldn't take two people talking about it for 5 minutes to figure out what's happening in the scene.
I agree.
Because like I said, I really like this section, but this in part, like, I thought it was just me because I was listening at work, mm-hmm. you know, and I was like, but nah, it's not. It's badly done. Shame on you, Philip Pullman.
Okay. Yeah. And this is when Mrs. Coulter shows up and
they're totally making out
and they're, like, still in love with each other, even though they've been working against one another this whole time. Which is absolutely
sickening, because, like, I thought Asriel was a good dude, but he wasn't a good dude. And she's the worst. And now they're just the worst together.
Yep.
They're just, like, making out and being, like, super, like, evil, mad scientists, like, Nazis. Like.
And I kind of love the fact that even though Philip Pullman is obviously, like, anti-organized religion...
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't make the guy who's a scientist the good guy. Yeah. I like the fact that even the scientist, he's like, yeah, we can treat science like religion too, and just sacrifice horrible things in the name of it, and it's still fucked up. Doesn't matter if it's religion or science. They both have their own crazy people.
Yeah.
So, thank you for that, Philip Pullman. Appreciated.
And he's like, come with me, and she's like, our love can never be, and... they're the worst, and you're just like, just fucking go jump off a cliff, because they're awful.
That sums it up. The end of book. Okay, good.
And she is, like, super, like, he's urging
her to come with him, but she won't for some reason. Like, she's saying that it's because, like, she's got her own shit and, like, the church won't let it. But, like, he's going to go to, like, Earth 2. Like, well, what's the church going to do there?
Yep.
And they're talking about how they're going to punish him and that the church won't allow this. But he's like, I opened a doorway to an alternate reality. Like, I don't think the church can stop that. That's way too interesting.
I love, too, when he says, we could take the universe to pieces and put it together again. Blah, blah, blah. Don't lie about who you truly are. And come with me, work with me, and I'll care whether you live or die. Stay here and you lose my interest at once.
Yeah, I just like that.
Super harsh.
Like, you're done.
So finally, he's leaving. Mrs. Coulter's crying, like genuinely actually crying. It's the first real emotion we've maybe seen from her other than anger.
Yeah.
And he walks up into the sky, and at this point, she's crying over Roger's body, and Pantalaimon suddenly like, hey, these people are all terrible, and they think dust is terrible, and maybe if terrible people think something's terrible, then that's actually a really good thing, and maybe we should try and stop them from destroying this thing that might be good, actually.
Yeah.
And she's like, oh, shit, that's a really good point. And she has to get up and walk into the sky herself and leave poor Roger's body in the snow.
And Mrs. Coulter doesn't try and stop her or anything? Like,
apparently, Mrs. Coulter, like, said to him that, because he says, you don't dare, your own child would dare. And she says, take her and welcome. She's more yours than mine, Azrael.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that she's not interested in trying to tell Lyra to stay or what to do anymore. Yeah,
like, it's just kind of unclear, like, whether or not she's still there. It's like whenever she makes her decision, she exits the scene, even though, like, you don't...
I don't feel like it matters.
I guess not. It's just kind of weird. So she is there and just standing there? Like, I don't
think
know.
She's just there, like, crying and not paying any attention to the dead boy in the snow that she didn't know or care about and her daughter that she's basically not interested in anymore.
Yeah.
And yeah, that's the end of the book, is Lyra walking up into the aurora.
Yeah.
Into the other city.
Yeah, she's buying a stairway to heaven.
So that, what do you got, any predictions for what you think's coming up in the next book?
My only weird prediction is that they're going to go there and it's like our world or something. And that's just, I completely pulled that out of my ass. I don't know. I guess she's going to have more crazy adventures and meet new weird peoples. I hope her new, like, whatever supporting cast she gets is interesting. Because I was kind of mixed on the people she hung out with in this book, you know?
Okay.
Like, I kind of liked Father Corum, but, like, he didn't really do a whole lot. I like the cowboy guy, but he barely got to do anything.
Yeah.
I like the bear, but he didn't show up until like halfway through. Like, I hope it's not more like the nice gypsy family or whatever that she hung out with in this one, because they were kind of boring.
They're just hanging out in the other world waiting for her.
Yeah. Oh, I hope she goes to a weird, crazy, like, Twilight Zone planet.
You mean like where it's a version of hers, but everything's like backwards or something?
Yeah, like everyone looks like pigs. You seen that episode?
Yeah, I have.
I like that one.
Did you ever see the SNL skit where they make fun of that episode?
No.
And it's all the doctors and all the people around look like pigs, but it's Pamela Anderson was guesting, and she wakes up with her regular Pamela Anderson face, and the nurse who has the pig face is like, oh, she's hideous, and the doctors are all looking at each other, and he's like, she's hot. No, this is way better. And the pig nurse is like, no.
That's pretty funny. Pamela Anderson is orange, though, which is
sometimes unappealing. She changes colors.
But you know me, I love like alternate reality stories, like that kind of shit. So that could be really fun. But it just kind of depends on how it's done.
Yeah. Know? And, like, it depends, too, if that's, like, the main focus of it or not.
Yeah.
Because it feels like it's circumstantial that it's another world and that the dust is, like, not necessarily dependent on
it. It's all about that dust stuff that I'm kind of getting tired of hearing about.
Hey. Well, do you have a theory on what that is then, if it's not original sin?
You told me that you never find out. It's just all these crazy theories.
I don't care
whether
you find out. I'm asking you your theory.
I'm going to guess that it is the life stream from Final Fantasy VII, which is the source of magic, and it's made of souls.
Okay.
Because I think that's cool. Like, I have no idea what it is. Like, maybe it's fairy dust, maybe it's Tinkerbell.
It is Tinkerbell. Oh, fuck you. You gave away the whole ending. It's Never Neverland that she's going to.
I just hope that they go big with this weird world. Like, I hope it's crazy. And she spends, like, the first third of the book being like, what? Like, just a bunch of, like, it's like a pirate world, but the pirates have jetpacks.
I like it.
Like, just something completely bonkers. Because, you know, that's the theory. That's kind of the premise of my Gamma World campaign that we've been playing in. Mm-hmm. Like, it's all about going to different, like, weird worlds and it just being crazy and, like, cartoony and over the top. And that's kind of how I hope it goes in this. But I don't feel like it will be. I feel like it'll just kind of be, like, normal. Like, my biggest fear is that she's going to go to this weird city, and for all I know, like, this could have just been a city in the world she was already in.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
Which is kind of how I feel it's going to be. But maybe it'll be interesting.
All right. Well, with that optimism,
I like that she's going after Azriel. Because, like, when I realized what was going to happen, I was like, he's going to kill Roger, and she's going to go after him. And finally she'll have, like, I feel like that's a good hook. Like, she's got a really good reason for going after what she's going after now. Mm-hmm. Instead of just being like, we're going to go save the kitchen boy. Like, I didn't care about the kitchen boy. And when he died, like, I didn't feel like Roger was much of a character. Mm-hmm. But now that he's dead, he's a good, like, motivation for her, which
so
I think is good.
He's been fridged.
Yeah, he's been fridged. He, like Gwen Stacy, was thrown off a bridge and was much more interesting after getting killed.
I like it. I approve of this. All right, well, I hope that you guys all enjoyed this episode. I don't have any new patrons or anything, but if you were interested in pledging, on patreon.com/unspoiled, you can pledge however much you would like per episode and set a monthly budget for yourself. And it is a really great way to support me and get access to some of the exclusive stuff that I've been doing with Owen, like the Star Wars trilogy that we just finished, and we also did Age of Ultron, and all of that's up for free for patrons, and also you get access to all my regular podcasts one day early, and we're also going to start doing, I'm going to be doing videos, very short ones after watching Fear the Walking Dead, because I can't fit in a whole new podcast on that, but I really want to watch it in the context of podcasting and the audience that I have since I've done so much with The Walking Dead. And that's going to be up exclusively for patrons to see. I'll be putting a little teaser on Instagram, but that's it. And also, Owen and I are going to be covering the prequel trilogy.
Ooh.
I feel like there should be a word, like a prequelogy.
I would just like to warn the listeners that I hate sand. It's coarse and irritating and gets everywhere.
What we're going to do is we're going to watch each movie and take a short film between movies with, like, my initial impressions and post those on Patreon. And then we're going to do the recording of one episode covering all three movies at once.
Yeah.
So it's going to be like a marathon all day. It's going to have a lot of content.
Guys, we're going to have a really bad day and you guys get to experience that.
But yeah, I'm going to try and do a little bit more in the way of, like, reaction videos and stuff here and there because it's fun.
This party's over.
And also, patrons get first dibs on voting for what my next project's going to be. So every time that I finish something, patrons get the first vote and they also get double votes. So everything that they vote for counts twice. So once again, if you're interested, patreon.com/unspoiled and, yeah, I hope that you check it out. And if you can't support me financially, I understand that because I am also very poor. So maybe you can share the posts from Facebook or tell your friends about it or retweet me or go to my Amazon page if you're going to shop on Amazon and use my Amazon affiliate link that's at the top of the page.
There's this really great website called unspoiled.com/Amazon. It's a great online store
that you can buy all sorts of things. You may have never heard of it.
You may never have heard of it because that address will not take you anywhere. So don't try to do that.
Oh, what's it? What, do you not?
I don't have an, like, I don't know how people set up like a specific address for their Amazon stores, because I have looked into trying to do that and I'm not good with a lot of computer stuff. Like, I can do basic things, but
yeah.
I don't have, all I know is how to put the link in there. Hmm. So yeah, if you go to unspoiled.com, the Amazon link is at the top of the page and you can just shop there like you normally would. And I will just get a tiny little percentage as a kickback for advertising for them.
What you can do is, okay, if you use Amazon a lot, odds are you have it bookmarked. What you can do is you can go there, click on that, and then you can bookmark, you know, the Unspoiled Amazon affiliate.
That's true. You can do that.
And just keep it at the top of your page. Because I'm really bad about forgetting to do that, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah, I actually have had a couple people tell me that they've done that. And I have no, I for a while, had no activity whatsoever on that Amazon. And recently, there's been a little bit of an uptick where I'm making like $10 or $15 a month. And I mean, that may not sound like much to you guys, but every now and then, I am so broke that when I get a sudden unexpected deposit from Amazon, it can save my ass. It genuinely can.
Yeah.
So I really, you know, whatever you can do. Sharing is caring. Shopping is popping. And pledging is sledging. Sledgehammering. All right.
Good night, everybody.
Thanks, everyone. See you next week.